The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Well, like Craig said, this week we are considering guilt and shame here at Bible Shots, as we look at Psalm 51. Now, guilt and shame, they're powerful feelings, and actually they can come from lots of different places. You know, you could feel a pervasive sense of guilt just because you ate carbs for lunch, you broke your diet. You could feel ashamed because you've made a fashion faux pas and you have to live with it throughout the day, like I did yesterday when I wore a brown belt with black shoes. Guilt and shame can actually come from a lot of different sources, and they're not always that problematic. But they can also come from much more serious sources. They can come from things that we have done that have caused serious hurt to others, that have caused serious damage. Guilt and shame can come from serious issues, and when they do, it actually causes a serious problem for us. It is hard to go on. It is hard to shake them. But when you stop and think about the different solutions that might be offered to guilt and shame that the world offers, well, actually, I find it really hard to find anything that the world offers. Just two examples of just how much we struggle with actual answers to the problem of guilt and shame. Lady Macbeth, for example, after her involvement in Duncan's murder, she just can't get her hands clean. She has no solution to the problem of being caught up in this man's murder. In the end, she commits suicide because there's just no other way out. There's no other escape from the guilt that is plaguing her. If you're familiar with your internet memes, you might know the claim, "It wasn't me," as the Shaggy defense, named for the R&B singer Shaggy, whose tongue-in-cheek song from the year 2000 offered advice to a man whose girlfriend had caught him cheating on her. Deny it was you. Whatever evidence is presented to condemn you, just hold the line. It wasn't me. Even if she saw you, just keep saying, "It wasn't me." And neither of those actually resolve the issue. I think they both point that our world really struggles to resolve the issue of serious guilt and shame. Guilt and shame are serious problems. But are there solutions? Well, in case you missed Craig's welcome before, let me add to it. Welcome to Bible Shots, and I'm glad to have you joining us today. At Bible Shots, we set time aside from our week to consider a part of the Bible and what it means for us today. Not everyone who attends Bible Shots is a follower of Jesus, though many of us are. But as long as you're willing to consider what the Bible has to say, you are welcome here. We're glad to have you along. And we're glad to have you along for this last week in our series, Words of the Warrior Poet. And we've called it Words of the Warrior Poet because we're looking at some of the Psalms of David. And Psalms are basically a collection of poems in the Bible. And David, who wrote many of the Psalms, including the ones that we're looking at over our short series, he was a warrior. He eventually became the king of ancient Israel, hence the Words of the Warrior Poet. But David also struggled with a lot of the big problems that we all face, and many of his psalms touch on these issues, and today we're considering Psalm 51. And so I'm really glad to have you along here as we consider this part of the Bible and what it might contribute to our understanding of guilt and shame today. This is the longest psalm that we've looked at in this series, and I won't be able to cover the whole text of the psalm during the talk, but if you've got questions on any part of the text that I don't touch on, you might like to ask that in question time at the end. But as we look at Psalm 51, we're going to focus on it in four parts. We're tackling it in four parts. First, we're going to look at David's actions and the background to the psalm. Two, we're going to look at David's problem as we start getting stuck into the text of the psalm. Three, we're going to see David's solution to the problem. And finally, we're going to consider guilt and shame for the rest of us. There are four big points today. So first off, David's actions. Before we get into the words of the psalm itself, the psalm actually wants us to remember the story behind it. The title of the psalm is part of the text. It says, "For a director of music, a psalm of David, when the prophet Nathan came to him after David had committed adultery with Bathsheba." Before we can think about what it means for us, the psalm wants us to remember the story behind the psalm. Now, some of us who have a bit of Bible knowledge will be familiar with the story, but it's worth doing a quick review of the key details and considering how that might help us as we look at Psalm 51 today. So David, who wrote the psalm, he lived approximately 3,000 years ago, around 1,000 BC. At this point in the story, he had become the king of ancient Israel. The previous ruler of Israel, Saul, he'd left God's ways behind. He started ignoring God's ways and walked away. And so God chose David as the one who would replace Saul as king. Now, David proved to be a good king. He defended the defenseless. He refused to kill Saul and take the crown for himself, even though Saul had repeatedly tried to kill David. David forgave his enemies when they joined his cause. David was the sort of person you would want as your leader. And after David became king, God promised David that one of his descendants would rule forever. And when you think about it, that's good, stable, long-term leadership. I mean, that's the dream of every country, especially in the turbulent world of the ancient Near East. But then, one spring evening, as the armies of Israel were off fighting their enemies, and as David, who was already married, strolled around the roof of his palace, he caught sight of a woman, Bathsheba. And David was instantly attracted to her. David summoned her, slept with her, and she fell pregnant. Problem. Bathsheba was also married. She was married to Uriah, one of David's warriors who was off fighting in David's army some ways off. And David tried to cover it up. He summoned Bathsheba's husband, Uriah, home from the front lines, hoping that he would take the opportunity to sleep with his wife. That way, no one would learn of David's indiscretion. But Uriah refused. Uriah didn't think it was fair that he enjoyed the comforts of home while his mates were roughing it back out on the front lines. David kept Uriah around for several days, hoping he'd change his mind, but Uriah refused to do what David wanted him to. So David changed tactics. He had Uriah carry a message back to the commander of the army that requested Uriah be sent to where the fighting was fiercest, and then, once they had advanced up into the enemy ranks, have the rest of the troops withdraw, abandoning Uriah to be struck down by the enemy. And that's what happened. The Bible was Game of Thrones long before Game of Thrones was a thing. And if you're interested in reading the story in detail, you can read it in 2 Samuel 11. David, who was supposed to be leading and protecting his people, did the complete opposite. And it looked like he managed to get away with it. But God saw and was angry. He sent Nathan, the prophet in David's court, to call out David and what he had done. And in Psalm 51, we have David's response to his wrongdoing being called out. And that's the story, that's the background to Psalm 51. But I think that there's three things in particular that are worth hanging on to and considering as we move in to look at Psalm 51. Three things to consider from the background. First, as we consider what David is talking about here, we are focused on real wrongdoing. This isn't just guilt and shame that's caused by eating too many carbs from breaking your diet or wearing pink and green together. No, these are serious wrongdoing issues that David is grappling with. These are serious problems. Also, it's David who did them. You know, when a person is in a position of responsibility and leadership and meant to be upholding and enforcing the law, it's a bigger problem when they break it compared to someone else. But I think these two things combine to say there's hope for the rest of us. You know, we've seen there don't seem to be great answers out there to serious problems of guilt and shame. But if David had a solution after murder and adultery, well, actually, there's a chance that there's hope for the rest of us. Well, we've considered David's actions, the background to the psalm. Let's have a look at David's problem. See, when we look at Psalm 51, we see familiar feelings that point to a deep and pervasive problem. Each of us is familiar with feelings of guilt and shame, and we see that David is in the grips of it right now. He's transgressed, verse 1, he's broken laws. He's got feelings of guilt with his iniquity in verse 2. He has a need for his sin to be washed away. Also, verse 2 implies a feeling of uncleanness, an experience and a fact of uncleanness. His sin is always before him, verse 3. He's carrying it around with him wherever he goes. He can't shake it. Or verse 8, his bones feel crushed. You can sense David's distress. And we've all done things that evoke these feelings. Sometimes they're even evoked years or decades later. Now, sitting here at lunch, it might seem like a distant reality, but when we lie down in bed at night sometimes, in the quiet of our own minds, we all can have things that come back and haunt us from time to time, at least. They are familiar feelings. But as we consider David's perspective as well, it confronts us with the news that the problem is worse than you might realize. See, guilt and shame that David is experiencing, they're actually the symptoms of a much deeper problem. My wife and I are expecting our first child towards the start of next year, and a couple of nights ago, we had our first birthing class. And in the car on the way there, we both said that actually we were perfectly happy living our lives in ignorance about what's going to happen. 3 hours of going into detail about the realities of giving birth and watching a birthing video wasn't what I would call a pleasant way to unwind at the end of the day. But there are some things that you need to know, even if they don't sit well, even if they make you uncomfortable. And that's the direction that David's reflections take him in. They're not comfortable, but they're realities he needs to confront if he's actually going to deal with the problem of guilt and shame. Because the feelings of guilt and shame are symptoms of a deeper problem. Have a look there at verse 4. Against you, you only have I sinned and done what is evil in your sight. So you are right in your verdict and justified when you judge. Now that might sound a bit jarring or a bit wrong to our ears, like David might be trying to minimize his murder and adultery, but David is not doing that. He's not minimizing what he's done. Actually, David is, it's worth remembering that God identifies with his people to an extent that attacking them is attacking God. But more than that, David's grappling with the impact that his actions have had on where he stands with God. You know, if God is the one who judges all and is good and just and is the source of life and blessing, well, David's actions against Bathsheba and Uriah have implications for his relationship with God, the one who judges all. You know, God actually established David as king, and so in failing in his duty, he's failed in his responsibility before God, but he's also attacked someone who God identifies with. He's sinned against God on multiple fronts. The bigger problem that David has is his sin. It goes deeper than his feelings of guilt and shame. David's problem is that his actions show he is opposed to God. David's problem is familiar. It's a deep problem, but it also is pervasive. Have a look there at verse 5. Surely I was sinful at birth, sinful from the time my mother conceived me. See, as David reflects on his problem, he can't hide from the fact that his problem isn't something he can just resolve to do better at. David's problem is bound up with his heart, with who he is. It's like his sin is a part of his DNA. It's not a bad habit he picked up from somewhere. If David's actions were just kind of a slip-up or a bad habit he'd gotten into, the solution might be as simple as pull your socks up, strive to do better next time. The diary that I use, the Full Focus Planner, one of the things it gets you to do at the end of the week is, you know, think about how the week has gone, what went well, what didn't go well, why didn't it go well, and what will you do differently next time? You know, the idea is that you think about what you've done well and poorly and you adjust your behaviour so you can improve going forward. There are some things that you get wrong and the answer is just, well, do better next time. But this is different. The deep problem of his opposition towards God, it's not something David can separate from himself. As he thinks about it, no matter what outward change he makes, the fundamental problem is still there. The problem of David's sin is pervasive of his entire person. David's problem is confronting. It's made up of familiar feelings, and when we confront genuine wrongdoing that he has done, we see it actually has the deep problem of opposition to God and his ways. And that sin isn't just an isolated event, but it pervades all of David's life. And what's worse for us is that while David is particularly in focus in this psalm, reading the psalm in the context of the whole Bible actually shows us that each of us has the same deep, pervasive problem that David did, even if we don't express it in the same way or in the same extreme or exact way that David did. And Jesus made this point particularly clear in his Sermon on the Mount. In his Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew chapter 5, Jesus said, "You've heard that it was said to the people long ago, 'You shall not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment.' But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment." Or, "You've heard that it was said, 'You shall not commit adultery.' But I tell you, anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart." You see, even if we aren't guilty of adultery or murder like David was, Jesus highlights that the problems of anger and lust show that we have the same deep, pervasive problem that David did. If we consider David's perspective on guilt and shame, it goes deeper than just a feeling. It's grounded in opposition to God and his ways that's pervasive of all of David's life. And as we consider it in the context of the whole Bible, that actually encapsulates us as well, even if we haven't done things wrong to the exact extent that David has. We all face the same problem. It's confronting to consider the full extent of this problem as David lays it out before us. Well, we've considered the problem. What about a solution? Is there a solution? And as we look at what David says, he says, yes, there is. There is a two-stage solution. First off, you need to get clean. The first part of the problem, solution to the problem of guilt and shame is to get clean. Verse 7, "Cleanse me with hyssop and I shall be clean. Wash me and I shall be whiter than snow." Or verse 9, "Hide your face from my sin and blot out my iniquity." David needs to be cleansed from what he has done wrong. The problem is, getting clean from wrongdoing is impossible. It is impossible for us to do. Lady Macbeth was right when she said, "Out, damn spot, out, I say." Or, "What need we fear who knows it when none can call our power to account?" Or, "Here's the smell of the blood still. All the perfumes of Arabia will not sweeten this little hand." Lady Macbeth is right. You know, you can't scrub guilt and shame away with soap and water. You can't reason it away by reassuring yourself that you're above the law, that no one's going to call you to account. You can't cover it over with something that smells sweet by just doing some good things and hoping that that balances it out. It doesn't deal with the problem of guilt. David says, no, real cleansing from guilt has to come from God. Guilt and shame need to be cleansed by God, who the sin was against. Only God can do it. The second stage in the solution is that you need to be made new. Verse 10, David says, create in me a pure heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. Now, David says, you need to be made new. So I'm a messy eater. If I'm eating somewhere and there's a white tablecloth, when the plate is removed from in front of me at the end of the meal, you'll be able to see exactly where the plate was on the table because of the outline of sauce splatter, oil stains and crumbs that are still in front of me with the void of where the plate was. You can clean the tablecloth, but next time I sit down to a meal at the table, it's just going to get messy again. The same thing's going to happen. You know, to actually solve the problem, I need to be changed or not invited over for dinner. But to solve the problem, I'm the one who needs to be changed. And it's the same when it comes to our sin. Our wrongdoing needs to be cleansed, but that in itself isn't enough. If sin is a pervasive problem that touches on everything we do, we need to be remade. And David says that too, like being cleansed, it's not something we can do ourselves. It actually requires God to step in and act. David's solution to the problem of sin is that he needs to be cleansed and made new, and he needs God to do it. And as the psalm continues, we actually see David's pretty confident this is going to happen, that God will cleanse him and make him new. And I think the clue as to why he's certain that this will happen is actually right back at the start of the psalm. Have a look at verse 1. Have mercy on me, O God, according to your unfailing love, according to your great compassion. That language of unfailing love, it's the way the Old Testament points to the fact that God keeps his promises. God is trustworthy. And God promises that he will be merciful to people who turn back to him. Well, we've considered David's actions, the depths of his problem, and we've considered his solution. What about guilt and shame for the rest of us? We've seen that the picture the Bible holds out is that we all have the same problem that David did, even if we haven't expressed it as strongly as David did. We need to be cleansed and made new, and as the story of the Bible continues, we see that the one who does this is Jesus. One of Jesus' followers, John, he actually worked through this problem in a letter he wrote to an early church. He wrote in 1 John chapter 1, if we claim to be without sin, we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just and will forgive us our sins and purify us from all unrighteousness. You see, it's Jesus the one who makes us clean. Or Paul, who wrote about two-thirds of the New Testament, he wrote in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, he said, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, the new creation has come. The old is gone, the new is here. All this is from God who reconciled us to himself through Christ. That's 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Jesus is the one who makes us new. Jesus cleanses us. Jesus makes us new. Guilt and shame are finally dealt with in Jesus. The message of the Bible is that it is Jesus who deals with the deep problem that we have that our guilt and shame flow out of. And Jesus cleanses and recreates the people who follow him. And when we think about this in the background of the psalm and what the Bible teaches, no matter what we have done, no matter what it is that has caused our guilt or our shame, we can actually be reconciled to God by following Jesus. Our guilt and shame can be dealt with. That is what Psalm 51, I think, contributes to our discussion of guilt and shame today. It's the solution it offers to the serious problems of guilt and shame. So as we finish up, what might that mean for us as we leave here today and head back to our workplaces? Well, first off, if you're a follower of Jesus, there's a call to remember just how serious a thing our wrongdoing is, but also to remember, again, just how good God is. We can also be encouraged that when we are struck down, feeling guilty or ashamed over things we have done, that we can turn back to God and seek his forgiveness. Be reminded of the cleansing and the new life that we have in Jesus. We ran out of time to look at it in the talk, in the body of the talk, but there's also the example in the psalm of David now teaching others God's ways. So I wonder if there's also an implication for us to be willing to tell of others about how good God is and how much he has forgiven us. David had a lot to be ashamed of, yet he was willing to be open about how much wrong he had done and how much he had been forgiven by God. There is scope for us to share just how much God has done for us. Maybe you would say you're a follower of Jesus, but you are burdened with guilt, uncertainty about whether you are good enough before God. Maybe much of what you do is driven by guilt and the need to find some relief from that guilt or from that shame. The psalm we are looking at today shows us how deep the problem of our sin is, but only so we can see in comparison just how good and gracious and loving God is and how willing he is to forgive us and cleanse us and make us new. If you've been worried that God is angry at you and your sin, the takeaway message here is that if you trust Jesus, you are forgiven. Remember David's actions, murder and adultery. God forgave him. And no matter what you have done, if you ask for God's forgiveness, know you are forgiven. If you aren't a follower of Jesus, it's possible that this whole thing is quite new to you, that asking God to forgive you and starting to follow Jesus is not quite where you're at yet. You might have a number of questions or objections, maybe about the worldview behind the psalm. Those are great questions to be grappling with, and we would love to help you think through them a bit further. You might like to come to our new series that's starting next week, Why Acts, and we'll actually be grappling with some of those other questions. But also, if you'd like to sit down and chat one-on-one, we'd love to grab a coffee with you and talk further, if you would like. But perhaps you've also been considering the worldview of the Bible for a while now, and you'd like to do what David has done, that you'd like to seek God's forgiveness. And, well, it's actually quite easy. While David was quite poetic in the psalm, actually seeking God's forgiveness is as easy as A, B, C. Admit, believe, commit. I'm going to finish today by praying a prayer. And if you'd actually like to start following Jesus and ask God to forgive you, you might like to pray these words along after me. I'll just read it through first, just so you know what I'll be praying, and then afterwards we will pray it together for those who want to. But like I said, ABC, admit, believe, commit. It says, God, I admit that I have done wrong, that I am a sinner. I believe that you are merciful and that Jesus died to cleanse me and make me new so we can be reconciled. I commit to following Jesus. Please help me do this. That's the prayer we'll be praying. And if you want to pray that prayer for the first time, you might also like to let us know via the feedback form that you have prayed that prayer. We would love to help you think a bit about, well, what does it look like to start following Jesus from here. We're going to pray, and then we're going to jump into Q&A time. Dear God, I admit that I have done wrong, that I am a sinner. I believe that you are merciful and that Jesus died to cleanse me and make me new so we can be reconciled. I commit to following Jesus. Help me to do this. Amen. We are going to have some Q&A time. We don't have heaps, but a question that has come through on the question line is, can you talk about Uriah? It didn't seem like he got justice. Is that fair? And yeah, that's a great question, and I think there's a couple of points to say to that. One is, Uriah is not really the focus of the psalm. The psalm is on David and his particular response to sin being called out, so it's outside the scope of what we're looking at today. But that's not really a very satisfying answer to the question, but it just means we do need to think a little bit more broadly and go outside the scope of Psalm 51 that we're looking at today to be able to answer it. I think one thing to remember is that God does care for his people. He cares for all of his people, and he wants to see justice done. That's one of the things that, as the Old Testament continues, God continues to criticize Israel's leadership for, is that they only care about themselves and not about the poor and the weak and the defenseless that they're meant to be caring about. So God does care about justice. At the same time, we don't always see justice now, in this world. Sometimes we do, but again, the Bible's picture is that ultimate justice will only be seen in the end, when Jesus returns, when God sets all things right at the end of time. There may sometimes be justice now, there can often, but not always. Not always. And so there is a tension there. I think the other thing to remember is that, yes, Uriah was wronged, but again, the story wasn't focused on him, and if it did, we would see, I am sure, that he is not a perfect person. He is not innocent. He has his own flaws and sins and problems that Jesus also died for. That's not to say he got what he deserved or anything like that, just that actually Uriah's sin ultimately still needed to be dealt with by Jesus on the cross, like David's did. It just wasn't a focus of the story. But finally, when you look at the story in 2 Samuel, there are consequences for David. God does forgive him, but there are still consequences. Being forgiven doesn't mean there aren't consequences to deal with. And God says the sword will never depart from your house. And as you keep reading the story of 2 Samuel, many of the problems that plague the latter part of David's life actually come from the destruction caused to the relationships in this network from David committing adultery with Bathsheba and killing Uriah. So even there, there is actually justice. There isn't no consequences for David. We will need to finish up there. I'll be hanging around so if anyone has further questions, please come and chat to me afterwards.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.